I want to speak about a topic which I think is fascinating, and I want to try to speak about it from a couple of different perspectives. Many of us know that we have different sources, and amongst different sources, when you speak about halacha, so one of the primary questions that we deal with sometimes is who exactly is considered to be, what are the sources that we rely upon, what are the sources that when we're trying to figure out how we're going to paskin, what we're going to do in the world of halacha, so what are the primary sources that really impact what we do? We know undoubtedly that if you're opening up any halacha sefer, so we're talking about things like a Gemara and classical Rishonim and classical Poskim. We're talking about a lot of sort of like the standard halachic works. One of the questions which many focus on and many people look at is the following. To what extent does the world of Kabbalah impact our halachic practice? If you find it, come across an idea in the Zohar, you come across an idea in the Arizal, I made it as if like we come across ideas in the writing. If one who learns Zohar would come across an idea in the Zohar, or you would come across an idea in the Arizal, so to what extent can that play a role in practice? To what extent can that play a role in halachic practice? And that's not, in general, that's an important question, but there are obviously different kinds of works. I think many of us would know that if you learn in Gemara and you come across a statement that's an agadic Gemara, not a halachic Gemara, so the Yerushalmi tells us, Ein lemeidin min ha'agados. We don't learn from Agada. It doesn't mean we don't learn Agada. It means that we don't practice based on what you find in an Agadic section of the Gemara necessarily. It may not impact things. I think many of us would assume that if we were learning Chumash and came across an amazing comment of the Sfarno or of the Rashbam, that we may not change our practice as a result. We may just learn an incredibly interesting comment of a particular Rishon, but it wouldn't necessarily change the way we practice. And one of the interesting questions is, so what about in the realm of halacha, how do poskim relate to Kabbalah? To what extent does Kabbalistic literature, a Zohar, a comment of the Arizal, comments in other kinds of places, if I'm a chassid and I'm learning the Tanya and I'm a Chabad or Lubavitch chassid, to what extent is what I find in Tanya or the Kabbalistic insights going to impact my practice? Many of us may know intuitively, before we even speak about it, that there does seem to be a little bit of divide between what we would call like classic Ashkenazi psak, which seems to incorporate Kabbalah a little bit less, and certainly what you'll find in certain Sephardic Sfarim, and certainly what you'll find in certain Hasidic works, as far as the exact impact of Kabbalah on it. I want to focus today on two different thinkers. One is the Chavetz Chaim, as we're in a series of shiur here on the Chavetz Chaim's thought. And then we'll speak about Rabbi Shemaiah Morgenstern, who is a fascinating figure. We'll talk about him, originally from London, I believe, and we will speak about him in a way which can make things a little bit relevant. But let's start as follows. Rav Eitan Henkin, in his Sefer on the Aruch HaShulchan, shares the following observation. The Mishnah Berurah, sometimes we're familiar with the Sefer because we learned it for Halacha Seder or things like that, and you can get to a point where on some level, what he does, we take for granted because we're used to it, especially if we learn it every day. What he did was fascinating. The Chavetz Chaim was Mishnah Berurah was a sefer that was very difficult, probably, to write, but amazing to read. Why was it difficult to write? It wasn't written in paragraph forms. It was written on the Shulchan Aruch to find areas of Shulchan Aruch where he was going to summarize things, and he divided up his work into three sections. So the Mishnah Berurah is where he's really just summarizing other poskim and telling you, like, what to do, telling you what to do. Mishnah Berurah was written primarily, the Chavetz Chaim himself spoke about this, was written primarily because, he writes this in the Hakadamah also in source number two, he felt pressure. He felt like, you know, as time moves on and there are more and more Sfarim that come out, there are more and more Poskim that come out, so it becomes harder just to, like, I need a place that ties things together. I need a place to look. So if I look at Shulchan Aruch, there's too much that's been written since Shulchan Aruch. It becomes too challenging. So Mishnah Berurah was like a summary in many ways of recent poskim and people commenting on Shulchan Aruch, and it was written ideally in a way, he tried to write in a way where the Hebrew was not too difficult, where the contents were not going to be too challenging, and he's not really getting involved in anything analytical in that, it's not an analytical work, the Mishnah Berurah section. What does he do when he wants to have a larger discussion? So what part of his sefer is for larger discussions? The Bir Halacha. The Bir Halacha is where, that's where I'm going to write like an essay, that's where I'm really going to sort of summarize what you find before Shulchan Aruch and Rishonim, and who is Bir Halacha written for? It's for a little bit of a different audience. Bir Halacha is, if I don't want to know what to do, but I really want to delve into the topic a little bit, I really want sort of like a deeper understanding, so let me look into Bir Halacha. And in the Bir Halacha, that's where things are really going to be sort of like tied together. That's what I'm really going to be able to see in a much deeper way. It's a difficult sefer to write like that. The Aruch HaShulchan, this Eitan Henkin points out, was written differently. That was written entirely in paragraph form. And when you're learning Aruch HaShulchan, you can't choose only the quick summary of what happens, as opposed to the more and discussions where it's more conceptual and more analytical, which are a little bit more complex. I have to learn everything. And that's part of what Mishneh Berurah is it's a work written for a regular average person who's not going to have the time to be able to really learn everything as thoroughly as possible. That's just, which is, I think, probably 99% of all people. And then once that's going to be the reality, that's sort of where you go. What does the Mishneh Berurah rely upon? So again, this is a little bit of an introduction to Mishneh Berurah in general, and then we'll shift towards the Kabbalah discussion. The Mishneh Berurah tells us that most of what he's doing in Mishneh Berurah is summarizing other people's works. And if we read Mishneh Berurah, we see that's what he does. A lot of what he's doing, he lists even who we're talking about. If you look in source number 2, it's amazingly impressive. It says, V'habir ha'hu, most of the bir here, most of the explanation of Mishneh Berurah is collected from the Bach, the Drisha, the Prisha, the Eliyahu Rabba, the bir Agrah, Pirmi Gadim, Birka Yosef, Amir Mordechai, Mati Yehuda, Nar Shalom, Dagmar Revava, Ber Heitev, Shari Tshuva, Shulchan Aruch, Shalom, Reb Zalman, the Baal Tanya, Levush Yisrad, Velev Shulchan Shlomo, and Derech Chaim, Chlish, Vekivi Egrish, Yos Yaakov, Machs HaShakal, Magen Giburim, Arshas Chaim, and some more. So clearly he had a decently impressive bookshelf, so it seems, which he's bringing into the Mishneh Berurah. Now, first of all, that's interesting in and of itself. It's great that he tells you what his goal is. Sometimes it's a hard thing when you're learning a sefer, and I need that introduction to tell me, what are you doing? It was a shift in the times of Rishonim. There's some Rishonim that wrote introductions to their Peirush Al Torah, this is what I do, the Ramban does that, and there are some Rishonim that don't. Rashi doesn't tell you what his goal is or where his sources he's taking are, where he's drawing from. And the Mishneh Berurah really tells you that. Now, what's missing from this list? What's the Chafetz Chaim? What's missing from this list? What's missing is any sefer that's Kabbalistic. Any sefer that's Kabbalistic is missing from this list. There's nothing there. There's one possible exception. What's the one possible exception? The Baal Tanya. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. However, this is interesting to know, the way many say it over, Shulchan Aruch HaRav happens to be a sefer that does not have a lot of Kabbalah Chassidus in it at all. Where did he put his practical, Kabbalah? Anyone know this? Any Chabadnikim? No. He put it in his Siddur. And the Siddur of the Baal Tanya is where he put it. That's why real Chabadnikim, in a machlokes between what he writes in his Shulchan Aruch and what he writes in the Siddur, the halacha is always like the Siddur. There's a Rus nafkamina, which is that Chabad's minhag, I believe, is not to read Rus on Shavuos or any of the Megillahs on those days. That's the minhag of Chabad. Why is an interesting discussion? If you look in Shulchan Aruch HaRav, it says that you have to read Rus on Shavuos, quotes the Ramah, standard poskim. If you look in the Siddur, that's where already he says, no. And the Machlokes between Chabad and that. So on the one hand, he quotes Shulchan Aruch HaRav, but when he quotes Shulchan Aruch HaRav in and of itself is not really a Kabbalistic work, and not only that, we'll see in a little bit. Even when he quotes things from Shulchan Aruch HaRav, it is never anything that is remotely connected to the world of Kabbalah. So as far as his primary sources, that's not there. What does he comment explicitly? So here there's two kinds of things to look at. One of them is an amazing job that was done. We'll talk about that in a second. But the Mishneh Berurah, at least in one place, tells us what you do with a machlokes between Kabbalah. And I want to keep halacha, and I come across Kabbalistic sources. What's the discussion? Is everyone here Ashkenazi? Yeah, I think everyone here is Ashkenazi. Jack's not here. If putting on tefillin in the morning, so do you sit or stand when you're putting on tefillin? Ashkenazim do what? We stand. Sfaradim sometimes? Okay. There are some who do one and one. Who the Shulchan Aruch quotes in Magen Avraham that some wanted to prove based on some Torah Kabbalah, you should do the Shel Yad, you should sit down with that. The Shel Yad you should put on sitting down. And the Shel Rosh you put on standing up. Why are you doing that? For Kabbalistic reasons. The Shulchan Aruch, the Mishneh Berurah here in source number 3 says as follows. First of all, the Rabbah quotes the Marshal that even for Kabbalah purposes, you don't have to and you're all good to go. The Bir HaGruah thinks, according to the Zohar, it's okay to stand. But then he quotes a comment of the Kesak Dola. This comment we're going to see is what you do with this comment is the game changer. Kesak Dola says as follows. All else being equal, Kol Yaposkim, whenever there's a machlokes between the Gemara and Kabbalah, Kabbalah always loses. Kabbalah always loses. However, if the Kabbalists are a little bit more machmir, so then it could be you should be machmir. we couldn't, says Mishnah Berurah, force anyone to be machmir, meaning Kabbalah can't be binding to make you be machmir. But it could be that if you wanted to, there's what to talk about. That's what, we'll see in a second, Professor Benjamin Brown calls the Mishnah Berurah all the time. Soft stringency is the king at not saying you have to be machmir, but having a line which is like, Yerushalayim or machmir. Like, if you're machmir, it's good. He's not in your face about it. He says, you know, like, soft stringency. Like, you choose. It's an interesting work. You can learn Mishnah Berurah, and a lot of it is up to your choice in a certain sense. I'm in that category or I'm not in that category. Rav Amital's father from Gush, you know, was often, you know, fond of, I think, pointing out, like, Yerushalayim didn't mean, like, I view myself as Orthodox. When he says Yerushalayim, it meant, like, a certain very, very high level. I think he said that was a practice in Europe. Was like, Yerushalayim was like, not like I aspire and I want and I, you know, like, really that's sort of where it's really at. But that's, if you want to, you can. But he says, when there's a machlokas haposkim, then Kabbalah is going to impact things. Now, what do you do with that? If I just read, there's one of two ways to go. One way to go, he's saying there's machlokas haposkim, you always go with Kabbalah. What could I theoretically envision happening? Anyone open up a Mishnah Berurah and ever see machlokasim and poskim? It's on every single umbud in Mishnah Berurah or multiple machlokasim and poskim. What does Chaim not do? He doesn't delve into the Kabbalah then and tell you, by the way, machlokas, Shulchan Aruch Ramah, let's get into the Kabbalah and figure out what you're going to do. He has this line, but it's not a work at all which is heavy on Kabbalah at all. And this is like the one, maybe one other place where he tells you, like, This is the general shita. How much does he actually rely on Kabbalah? So this is where he gets something fascinating. Professor Benjamin Brown, source number 5, did something amazing. He went through every context of Mishnah Berurah where he quotes anything Kabbalistic. He tried to figure out where is he bringing it from. Is he quoting it L'chumra or L'kula? Is he quoting it in the context of a Machlokas HaPoskim? And is he telling you have to follow it, not have to follow it? Is he rejecting it or holding like it? It's like 10 to 12 pages of just like an intense chart. I don't know if it's every place. At minimum, it's 100, you know, close to 200 places in Mishnah Berurah where he quotes Kabbalistic things. It's honestly, it's the way you're supposed to do things if you want to actually figure out what the Mishnah Berurah does with Kabbalah. He even gets a little bit fancier, which are pointing out places where other poskim do quote Kabbalah and the Mishnah Berurah doesn't quote Kabbalah to give you a little bit of insight also in terms of what he does. What are the conclusions for when he quotes Kabbalah? I don't know. It's just like, I think he's just right in the things he says. What he points out is as follows. Number one, the Chafetz Chaim quotes, deals intensely in Kabbalistic works, including in Bir Halacha and Sar Tzion, in 163 places in all the Chafetz Chaim. That's obviously a significant amount. He quotes thousands and thousands and thousands of sources, so it's like batel b'shishim, you know, as far as the general. But that's a significant discussion. Now, here's interest. What's interesting? Let's point out three things. Point number one. The Chafetz Chaim may quote Kabbalistic sources. He almost always quotes them through other poskim. It's not primary source Kabbalistic. It's the Magen Avraham quotes a comment of the Zohar, so I quote a comment of the Zohar also. The Magen Avraham quotes a comment from the Arizal, so he'll quote that also. There are times where he won't even quote it, but almost always when the Chafetz Chaim quotes a Kabbalistic source, it's from poskim. That's point number one. Point number two, anyone here ever learn a Ramban al Torah and he gets Kabbalistic and we have no idea what he's talking about? Yeah. Almost always, whenever he quotes a Kabbalistic source, it's a Kabbalistic source which is quoted in one of the previous poskim that he's quoting. Yeah. No, he's quoting it. Like Magen Avraham quotes this. Yeah. Then what you have... Okay, the second point, which is Yaakov's point right now, which is awesome, is what? Okay. So what he does is interesting. He'll tell you, like, the Magen Avraham quotes the Zohar, this is what you do. What he doesn't do is really go into, like, that primary source of the Kabbalah. I don't know if, I've never had this learning Mishnah Berurah. It has from Ramban al Torah all the time. You open up a Hasidic work where it's like, whoa, this is Kabbalistic, I have no idea what's going on. That's not true in Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah, it's more like, the Zohar says you shouldn't walk Dalet Amos in the morning without washing the Tiyas Adayim. Not because of what's happening in Shamayim as a result. These are the secrets that are occurring, the secrets of Torah. He doesn't delve into the actual Kabbalah at all. He just quotes it. What this is reminiscent of is the way he uses it in other Sfarim. We spoke about this last week a little bit. We were talking about Lashon Hara last week, And we pointed out how, what does the Chafetz Chaim do when in the beginning of Chafetz Chaim? So typically, what does he do in his far with Kabbalistic sources? He's clearly familiar with Zohars. He quotes lots of Zohars. He quotes comments from Kabbalah. But what does he do with them? What do we see there? He, first of all, sometimes brings it to halacha, but here, that's more with Musar. He actually does take some Kabbalah and make it into Musar. Where else does he do with it sometimes? What he does, which is amazing, he uses it to, like, be mechazik us in certain areas. Like, Lashon Hara is really bad, because the Zohar says, like, when you speak Lashon Hara, X, you know, it's not brought to, like, analyze the Kabbalistic work. Like, there's no, like, in Bir Halacha, it's like rigorous analysis of halachic sources. He doesn't do that with Kabbalah so much. And even if you look at also in Sefer Chafetz Chaim, he quotes Kabbalistic sources, but it's almost always like in a Musar Agada way. And even in the Musar Agada way, without delving the way the Maharal does to explain it, his halachas farim are pretty much standard halachas farim. And again, it seems like, at least from what you see here, in many ways it's secondary. Did he learn Kabbalah? So this is awesome. What was on his bookshelf? So the Chafetz Chaim's son tells us what Kabbalistic farim were on the Chafetz Chaim's bookshelf. If anyone wants to go shopping today to Meir Sharim, I guess you know, and you want to recreate the Chafetz Chaim's bookshelf, I guess you can. He points out as follows. He very much valued Chachmas HaKabbalah. It's in source number 5 on the sheet at the way end. Hichzik me'od b'chachmas HaKabbalah ba'amru. Ki u'echad mechalkei HaTorah ha'yoser ne'elam. It's one of the most elevated sections of Torah. Very nice. U'margla b'pumei tamid ki b'li sisrei Torah b'gashim anu be'afela. Without sisrei Torah, without Kabbalah, a person's really in the dark, and you can't really understand Hashem without it. Amnam, but still, duh, ki lo yaspik lo hazman les amik. But he didn't have that much time to spend, like, really learning Kabbalah that much. Because b'svil limudav haniglim sheheim tzorech rabim. It's an amazing thing. The Chafetz Chaim was a popular author. What he was trying to do, he was trying to write popular works for people that needed it. It was not about writing only for the scholarly elite. He was writing svarim for people that needed it, and he understood my primary investment of time has to be in things that the masses need. What do the masses need? They need a halachic work about what do I do if I'm drafted into the Russian army and I have to figure out how do I manage halacha properly there, one of his svarim. What is halacha svarim for people that are going to America and they're not going to be, in his time, 1920s, you know, in a strong Jewish community, what are the halachas that they have to know about? Another sefer. He didn't have time to be osek in Kabbalah that much. It wasn't something which he primarily invested in. But what did he have? He said, v'ayim b'sifrei Kabbalah rak lefamim. He would look sometimes in Kabbalah. Usually late at night. That's what I remember from when I was young, he says. So what did he have? He had, like, you know, some of the basics. Sefer Yetzira, Sefer Yitzniusam, Biri Hagra, Sefer Tmuna, Sefer Zohar, Sefer Apardes, Sefer Moshe Cordovero, Sefer Yitzchayim, Pri Yitzchayim, Sefer Vosa Kodesh, the, you know, Sefer Shari Ora, Ginas Ego, Shef Atal, you know, that's it. Zula Samlo, nothing more than that.
That's it?
I don't know. It's pretty... I think I brought my entire shelf of Kabbalistic literature here today with me in my hand right now. So, you know, like, I definitely... But that's... So he definitely was... He had access to the Sfarim. It does not seem... It seems like he was familiar with it. This is very different than, you know, Rabbi Saul Salanter, who was very open all the time, like, this is not my thing. This is not my thing. Like, the Kabbalah is not my thing. You know, when they asked him, like, you know, Api Kabbalah, this is one of his lines, he was an intense Baal Musar. You know, like, oh, what's Gehenna like? It's Kabbalistic Sfarim, right about Gehenna. So his answer was always, I don't know, I know it's going to hurt. You know, that was like his insight. You look in some of the Kabbalistic Sfarim, and you see, like, long discussions about, like, different levels of Gehenna. You know, the first Salanter, like, it's not where he's going. Kabbalistic Chaim, he's quoting it, but it's not the dominant thing that you get. He tries to argue here in the article, this relates to the Chafetz Chaim we spoke about last week as far as simple faith. The Chafetz Chaim is a believer in simple faith and in not being, you know, so complex and all the details of how God operates, but just the knowledge that God operates and things like that. But that's that. Now we come across a very different figure with a very different orientation, Rabbi Shemaier Morgenstern. Now, Rabbi Shemaier happens to be, he writes a little bit about the Chafetz Chaim's, like, soul and where he thinks it comes from. There's a lot of wild Torah about him. Rabbi Shemaier is a, how many of us have heard of him? I don't know if he's so, okay. Rabbi Shemaier is an out-of-the-box figure who lives in Yerushalayim nowadays. He's originally from England, who is a major figure in the Hasidic world nowadays. He's very much connected to Breslov. He functions on some level as an independent thinker. He's not really affiliated per se entirely with Breslov or all the way there. He's written a lot of Sfarim. It's a lot of heavy Kabbalah. A lot of heavy Kabbalah. that Rav Itzchak Meyer has. He's enormously popular. I imagine some of us may know people who are learning Yerushalayim that go to him on like for Shalosh Shudis on the Motzei Shabbos, or there are ways to go with him. He's an amazing. I have a friend or two that are very much influenced by his Torah. He's a very sort of like spiritually in touch person. He's very intense, publicizing in a lot of Kabbalah. They put out his farm. His farm are called Yam HaChachma, which deal with some very intense Kabbalah and some other things. There is just an amazing letter, just to get an insight into who he was. In source number 7, Rav Aaron Brafman was a Rebbe in where? Shifra Rockaway for many years. This letter, Rav Aaron Brafman's brother, Ben Brafman, is a very famous lawyer. He defended a variety of different well-known celebrities. Ben Brafman's a very, very famous lawyer. So his brother, Rav Aaron Brafman, passed away a year or two ago, was a Rebbe in Yeshiva Rockaway, and summers worked in camps. Richard Meyer Morgenstern, it's just an amazing letter to be aware of. Rabbi Josh Rosenfeld put this on Twitter just years ago. It's an amazing letter. Richard Meyer was around 13 years old. He was a kid in camp where Rav Aaron Brafman was a Rebbe. And after the summer, he wrote the following letter. So he got an appreciation for who he was. It says a lot about Rav Brafman, it says a lot about Richard Meyer. He wrote a letter to Richard Meyer's parents, and he wrote as follows. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Morgenstern, now one of the things which is interesting about Richard Meyer, he's from this, a little bit of a newer connection to Hasidus, but doesn't have this, like, the notion of dynasty, like father, son, father, son, father, son. There's a bunch of those people, like the Tzvi Meyer, Zilverberg, if you're familiar with some of these people, who are, like, not being bound by some of the, like, the formalities that Hasidus has fallen into. And some would argue it's much more of, like, a reconnecting to what you had originally in Torah Sachasidus, which may have broken off of some of that. But this is the letter he wrote to Rich Meyer's parents when he's about 13 years old after camp. This is an amazingly wild letter to write. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Morgenstern, I've rewritten this letter 4 times, each time differently, because I want to express myself without sounding ridiculous or creating in you any anxiety about Yitzchak Meyer's potential. I truly feel, as do others, that he is something special. I've seen many bright boys, but never the combination of a good head, Hasmada, Yerushalayim, Midas Tovos, as one sees in Yitzchak Meyer. His joy in learning and his sensitivity and understanding is just beautiful, and it is all natural, not forced, which is why he's a perfectly normal, happy child. I can tell you I felt an aura of Tahara and Kedusha when I learned or talked to him. I felt that I had an image, of course, earlier generations are on the lower Madrigas, of what the Chavetz Chaim or Chaz Nisht might have been like in their youth. I'm not saying this facetiously, he electrified and captivated the whole camp. If this stays with him and he grows in learning, he will someday be a man of Yisrael. I'm sorry if this makes you feel a bit concerned, because it is an awesome responsibility. But you are blessed with a special matana. If I may offer some advice. How many of you have seen this letter? Seen this? It's wild. It's unbelievable. I'm sure he's above his class level, and that could begin to frustrate him. On the other hand, he can't be out of yeshiva for social reasons, and because of a need to avoid the kinah of others. Perhaps you could have someone who is a Talmid Chacham, not just an older bachar, tutor him for a while during school time. Have him learn another perek or mesachas. Yitzchak Meyer will find the time to review it. If he can do this for 2 or 3 years, he will become baki in hundreds of lot. After that, he probably will finish the rest of Shas on his own. Parenthesis, he finished Shas in Shulchan Aruch before his wedding. He should be exposed to people who are gedolim to develop his Havana, and ultimately he will choose and create his own derech and learning. We'll speak in a second. I believe he did. I hope someday to be able to say that I had this close of learning with him when he was a Bachar. I want to repeat that I haven't gone mad. I deal with hundreds of Bacharim and have been in Chinuch for 14 years. With best wishes, Ksiv Chimatova, and a good convention to yours, sincerely, Aaron Mordechai Brafman, P.S. regards to Yitzchak Meyer. It's wild. It's wild stuff. He's one of those kids. I don't know. You know, like it's like, you ever encounter, Rav Huttner talks about this, how like Gedolim biographies sometimes are a little bit dangerous because they make it seem like kids were perfect from their youth. And really like the Chavetz Chaim, I'm sure, had to struggle in order to get to the point where he wasn't speaking Lashon Hara and things like that. There are also people that it seems from their youth were just special. There also are. It's important to know that regardless of how a person is, they can always develop and work on themselves. But there are people in aura and kedusha and tahara, the kid's 13. I feel like I have some insight in terms of what it was like to see the Chavetz Chaim or the Chaz Nisht, albeit with Yiris Hadoros, when he was a child. He has a kedusha with him. It's wild. It's wild and wild. What an amazing letter. What an amazing letter to write, also, as far as a mechanech, to write, knowing even the self-awareness of, you are going to think that I'm crazy, but I need to just write this anyway, because like, you know, I have to. This is not, I don't write this every year to every kid's parent to make the parents feel good. You know, like one of those kinds of things. Like sometimes from, you get from like, I know my kids are being sent home, like, I think in America they call it like a nachas note. like just like a note of like your kid's doing great. And sometimes you know like there's a cycle and like it's your kid's turn to get the note, you know, like this week. You know that's true. Like, yes, every 20 weeks we get a note, you know, that says like da, 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 which is great and I respect it and it still makes me feel good because I'm a sucker for that stuff. It works. It's all good. This letter, though, whoa, that's Richard Meier. Richard Meier is very much influenced by Breslov, and he's very much influenced by God and by a whole lot of Kabbalah, a whole lot of Kabbalah. In all of his Sfarim, so he published tshuvas. He's a real major Talmud Chacham. His tshuvas are wild. His tshuvas, halachic response. So in general, at least according to Wikipedia, two things I learned. Number one is that Mordechai ben David views himself as a chassid of Richard Meier at some point nowadays. That in of itself is fascinating. I did not know that. The second thing is that it's on both Mordechai ben David's Wikipedia page and Richard Meier's Wikipedia page. Just to check that it was confirmed from multiple sources. The second thing about him is a lot. He will tell people like go. You know, if you have a shiloh, go ask this person. Go ask that person. They write in the beginning of a sarm like don't paskin lemaisa based on what I write in the tshuvas. They also write that Nigros Moshe and many, many halachas svarim, so it's hard to know sometimes, like, when you're writing that to sort of, like, cover yourself, and when you really sort of, like, mean that. But for him, he probably, just to see the way he works through halacha, even if it's not psak, the way he works through it is interesting. That same klal of the Knesset HaGadolah we quoted earlier, when there's machlokes between Nigla and between Nigla, we go to Kabbalah, for him, it's very, very different, his tshuvas. And the first tshuva, Shut Yam Chachma Simen Aleph, is him talking about his methodology. Let me just give a little bit of background. Number one, it is hard to follow his tshuvas if you don't have a real background in Kabbalah. This is not the Mishneh Berurah's Kabbalah of the Magen Avraham quotes a comment of the Zohar. This is primary source, rigorous Kabbalah, and it's hard to follow if we don't have more of a background in Kabbalah, at least that's my experience in it, which I can definitely speak from the expertise of having no background in Kabbalah, that at least it's hard to understand it from that perspective. Number two, when you learn his farm, he's going back to the primary sources, and it's analysis of real Kabbalah. It's not just the things quoted in the Magen Avraham, he's just giving you more of the background. He's really analyzing in that kind of a way, in a way which is really very, very wild. His first tshuva has to talk about who says I can do this. I don't see this in standard tshuvas. So he argues a bunch of things that are interesting. Number one, there is a tshuva, many of us are familiar with the Gemara in Bava Metzia, we spoke about this last year at length on a Friday, of Loba Shamayim Hi, that whether we paskin or don't paskin based on heavenly revelations and the like. So first thing he points out is the Chida. He relies a lot on some Sephardi poskim here because they tend to rely much more on Kabbalah. But he says the Chida writes that there's a tshuva called, there's a sefer, a wild sefer called Shut Min HaShamayim, tshuvas from heaven. What is Shut Min HaShamayim? It is one of the Baalei HaTosvos who is writing his responsa, stating that the response that he's getting are things he received from Shamayim, meaning not from his own rigorous study. So for a lot of poskim, it's a cute sefer to look at, but we can't paskin that way. Loba Shamayim Hi. We rely on rigorous human analysis. That's how we learn. The Chida, one of the great Sephardi poskim, argues that no, you can rely on Shut Min HaShamayim. That's a starting point. He then goes on a little bit. I don't know if we have the sheet entirely here. Sorry, I don't know if you do. But he points out as follows. Next is like this. Once there is a machlokas haposkim, so now Kabbalah matters. So whereas the Chavos Chaim brought this klal when it's a machlokas haposkim, so then Kabbalah matters. He isn't really bringing Kabbalah that much systematically in dealing with machlokas and poskim. But Richard Meier, it could totally be that. Like, I'll give you an example. How many strings of tcheles, if you wear tcheles, he does, how many strings have to be blue, how many have to be white? How many people here wear tcheles in the room? Okay. How many of you, if you're a Rashi Tosfos person, it's four blue and four white. Who does that in the room? How many of you do one blue and the rest white? How many of you do two blue and six white? Amazing. So we're good in the room. Machlokas HaPoskim. How do you paskin? Well, I don't know. Once it's a Machlokas HaPoskim, where do we go to paskin? Torah HaKabbalah. That's where we go. So a lot of the tshuva has to be, there's Rashi, Rambam, Ravid, very good. And now let's get into Kabbalah a little bit. He expands it another way also. Yeah. What do you mean? No. So he's claiming he's not Shul Shiachid, and we'll see in a little bit. You certainly find it by a lot. We'll see what he says about the Baal Tanya a little bit. He's claiming he's not Shul Shiachid. We spoke about this last year a little bit. There are Rishonim that seem to hold this way also. Let's point out as follows. One is, he's comfortable sort of like bringing in a lot of Kabbalah, and Kabbalah, when you do have Machloksim. He expands it in another direction also, which is a little bit wild. He says, So which Kabbalistic works matter? When we say there's a machlokes between nigla, we follow Kabbalistic works, which Kabbalistic works matter? So if Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, where if Moshe writes, it's quoted in Sefer Pesukei Tshuva, it's there in source number 4, that means, like, Sefer Zohar. Doesn't mean writings of the Arizal. It's a Zohar, which limits, even if I'm comfortable bringing in Kabbalah, it's going to be limited to things like the Zohar. Richard Meyer argues that's not true at all. It's amazing. He says, the writings of the Arizal, undoubtedly, you can paskin like writings of the Arizal. Why can I paskin like writings of the Arizal? This would have been more appropriate to hear before Lag BaOmer, I know. Why paskin like the Arizal? He says, because some were hesitant, saying the Arizal is Lo B'Shamayim. He revealed his Torah, his Kabbalah comes from revelations. It's not true. It's not true. The Arizal's Torah all came from learning Zohar really, really well. All of Kisvei Ha'ari are an elaboration of Zohar. And who is the best interpreter of Zohar? The Ari. And therefore, if you're comfortable passing based on Zohar, you must also be comfortable dealing with Torah from the Arizal. Why am I comfortable? Because the Arizal is working off of Zohar. He says, for sure, for me, you're comfortable with more of the Sfardish or Kabbalah. You're comfortable with the Baal Tanya and Chtor Chassidus. They're Mikabel the Arizal all the way. For sure, that's true. He says, but aren't there some that say for the Gra, that the Gra thought that everything the Arizal had was 100%? So first of all, the Gra, Talmidei HaGra say, the Gra never argued really with the Arizal in Kabbalah. Sometimes he did. So the Gra argued something with the Arizal about practice. But as far as the inner workings of Kabbalah, even the Gra's Moda, that the Arizal is really the person that's going to do it. And therefore, in the halachic process, you talk about Kabbalah, for him, it's like a very extreme, intense approach where you really can take that all the way there. That we believe in it all the way, and we're entirely good to go. Now he has a problem. Okay, I'm a Kabbalist. I want a Paschim based on Kabbalah. Problem is, I'm also Breslov. Who cares? I'm Breslov. Guys, we're not going to have some thoughts on this topic. And that's where it gets a little bit tricky. And here, source number 8 on the sheet. Likutei Halachos is a sefer written by one of the great Talmidim of Rabbi Nachman, Rabbi Nassan. Likutei Halachos is an amazing thing. It's a sefer, if you've never seen it, that is structured like Shulchan Aruch. So this is in Hilchos Bechor Behema Tehora. It's like, this is structured like Shulchan Aruch, but it's all the Kabbalah and the Chassidus behind Halachas. So it's not a halachic sefer at all. Even if you're Breslov, you don't learn this for halacha seder. This is a sefer of chassidus, it's a sefer that's written structured there. So in Hilchos Bechor Behema Tehora, Gimel Tes, Rav Nassan says as follows. You can't learn halacha lemaisa from Kabbalah stuff. Why? I heard from Rabbi Nachman. Shemisha wrote to Lechadis Chidushin b'Torah. If you want to be Mechadish in Torah, Mutalo Lechadis Kol Masha Yirtzeh Umuray Lekach. You can have innovative Torah. That's a wonderful thing. Uvavachlo Yotzi Shem Din Api Chidusha V'Jerusha of Shemichayish b'Torah. But you can't be Mechadish Halachas based on Kabbalah. Kidini HaTorah Tzvich Levaram Rak Api Divri Rabbi Seinu B'Gemara Uveposkim. You have to paskin based on Gemara and Poskim. Avachalil Lehotzi Shem Din Api Svaro Shemichayish B'Dorish b'Torah B'Derach Draf So does V'Kabbalah. You can't do it. So I'm a Breslover and I love Kabbalah. So what do I do with Psak? So Richard Meyer, again, the reason why I'm going to talk about him is not only because he's like increasingly relevant and it's new Torah, but he's a great contrast to the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim is open. I mean, the Rambam is, I guess, the greatest contrast probably, but in contemporary poskim, the Chafetz Chaim plays it down so much, only quotes it with other poskim. Richard Meyer is much more engaged in it. But what do I do with the fact that Rabbi Nachman seems to be one of those people that's not so into it? So he says the following. Rav Gedaya Kenig, who was the Rav of Tzvas, of the Breslov community in Tzvas, I believe, for many years, pointed at the following. Look at source number 9. We have this sheet. I'm going to give one. Oh, I'm sorry. I messed up. Source number 9. Rabbi Nachman and Chaim Moran wrote as follows. This is like a... I don't even know what to do with this stuff. It's wild. Omar. Yu lo haya yote seif zeha seif for the olam. Rabbi Nachman said, if not for the fact that I published Likutei Moran, hayinu seif Likutei Moran, hayinu nasa inyan acher. I would do something else. Because he really has a cheshek, kamapamim, la'asos halachas psukos, al shulchan arach, levarach kol dividim, alacha psuka. Binachman says, you know what I really have a desire for? And we're thinking like dancing on top of a van, you know, like a lot of different things. Binachman's like, I want to write a sefer on halacha. I'm just going through halacha lemaisa. Like, I just want to do that. It's like a sugar like rebellious, no? Like, that's where, you know, like, Olahatik halacha k'divrei miposkim. It's a cold divinity. Like I said, how do we paskin? That's what I want to do. But he says, achshav sheyata zeh hasefer l'olam. This is the line. Lo yihye inyan hanal. Once I've written the kutimar, it won't be. It won't be. What does he mean? What does he mean? Once I've written the Kuti Moharan, it won't be. So he quotes Rabbi Shemayer here. V'chin yish Kabbalah in there in Tzvin Aleph. B'shem hagon atzad v'gudai kenek zatzal. B'vir hanmaimer sh'amar Rabbeinu zal. Sh'acharei shish the Kuti Moharan ba'olam. Ein sarich l'chaber sefer hachoraos b'dinei ha'shulchan aruch. There's no longer a need to paskin in Shulchan Aruch. Want to be nachem about the Kuti Moharan. This is wild Torah. He says Pashtas, and the Pashtas has something to do with Kabbalistic that I don't understand, is what Rabbi Nachman really meant. But also he meant, and this is what I do understand, She'esher gam l'hachriyeh b'machos ha'poskim al-pi soda inyan ha'mavur b'likuti moran. You know what Rabbi Nachman was saying there? He was saying, once I've written likuti moran, there really isn't that much of a need anymore for me to write a halacha sefer. You know why? If you learn likuti moran really well, and you're saying that what's going on there Kabbalistically beneath the surface, you know how to deal with machosim and poskim. You no longer need me to write a sefer how we paskin, because I've given you the tools. I've given you what you need. So, Richard Meyer says, I'm a Breslover. And one is written, so now we know we have a Mahalach. We have our guide. Our guide for how we're going to paskin. Our guide for how we're going to do things. So what you find with him in his tshuvas is a lot of just fascinating, fascinating Torah in his tshuvas, where it's a tshuva, and I'm like, what is happening? And the answer is, it's a lot of like amazing analysis of questions that come up in light of Kabbalistic literature. Let me just try to summarize what we spoke about this morning, and then we'll just try to maybe wrap things up with a point or two. Poskim deal with, one of the primary questions Poskim deal with is, what are your primary sources? The Rugachever deal primarily more with like primary Gemara, some basic Rishonim, that's what I deal with. Other Poskim from Ravadia Yosef, he's relying on, we spoke about this earlier in the year, just tons and tons of tshuvas in response to do it. For Moshe Feinstein, he's relying on Lesfarim. One of the primary questions you deal with is, are they bringing in Kabbalah? Are they not bringing in Kabbalah? It matters, doesn't matter. For the Chavetz Chaim, officially we bring in Kabbalah, and he does, you know, in the triple digits. But it's always like through poskim. It's not as binding as you need to be machmir because of it. He almost never will quote a Kabbalistic source to be makel. It's something you quote if I want to be a little bit more machmir, although, albeit, with what we call soft stringency. That's part of how the Chavetz Chaim does it. And again, it's not ever really delving into Kabbalah. The way he does delve into sugya is like in a Bir Halacha. For Richard Meyer, it's very, very different. For Richard Meyer, it's bringing in Kabbalah to your psak in a way which he's very open about it and very comfortable about it. And he can try to prove to you why it's okay in the writings of the Baal Tanya. Because the Baal Tanya, even in Shulchan Aruch Harav, doesn't do it, but in his Siddur, he definitely impacts practice. Rusan Shavuos, again, I believe that's an example. And he's comfortable doing things like that. And we can talk about it in the Chida, in the Kaf HaChayim, which is written like the same time as Mishnah Berurah, bringing Kabbalah to things all over the place. And you have that emphasis, and he's comfortable doing it in a way which is really going to sort of like bring things in a little bit. For him, a lot of that has to do with Apitoros Chassidus, also why it's okay. We know Chassidim often paskin and did things based on just not pure Torah HaNigla. That much we know also was undoubted. And for him, it's bringing in the Kabbalah in a very, very powerful, in a very powerful way. One of the reasons why I want to talk about this morning, as far as just the Chavetz Chaim, but also in general, is I think sometimes, you know, we spend time learning, and we spend time learning, let's say, in a Gemara shir, we learn a particular style, and we hear different shirim in different ways. One of the best things that we can get sometimes is just exposure to the range of what people are doing. Number one, but earlier in the week, there's a lot of new Torah out there in the world, and it's exciting, and it's vibrant. And to see what's going on, just to be aware of it, is an amazing to be aware of what's going on in Klal Yisrael. But more than that, to be aware of just the range of approaches and how people paskin, the range of approaches of what people learn and how it impacts things, there's a lot of important insight there that can be very, very valuable for us, hopefully, to be able to sort of like, to find your own approach sometimes, have to know that there are approaches. Now, are the vast majority of us going to be more in the Chavetz Chaim camp as opposed to like, you know, writing Shut Yama Chachma, you know, Chelek Dalid, you know, like at any point? So the answer is yes. I would imagine that's the case. But nevertheless, it's important to know what's out there. And even for our own learning of Mishnah Berurah, it's great to pick up a little bit. It's like, what's he doing? And to be sensitive to the fact, like, wasn't it a brilliant move, Mishnah Berurah over here and Bir Halacha over there? Just to be able to separate it, to make it user-friendly. That's what he was going for. Chavetz Chaim is trying to write a user-friendly work. Richard Meyer, it's not what it's about. It's not about the masses. It's about writing to that crowd that's able to understand and fathom the Kabbalah that he's teaching. He's not trying to sell, I mean, the Chofetz Chaim was about selling copies, obviously, but it's not going to sell as many copies as Sefer Chofetz Chaim did. It's not what he's going for. What it will do, though, is deepen an appreciation and delve into certain topics in ways that is not really, they haven't really been assessed that much. Have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful Shabbos.